This week, silver blasted higher 2%, and the Dow Jones Industrials closed at the highest weekly point in its history. Chris Walczak here with the inside market information to help you make better informed investment decisions. Imagine waking up and finding the next morning that the cash you'd saved is mostly worthless. Yes, just yesterday, all was fine and well. Suddenly, economic chaos, your neighbors, friends, family. 98% of daily transactions can no longer take place. There's simply no way to buy groceries, gasoline, necessities. Everything shuts down. It just did in India, where officials made the most popular currency notes useless, worthless. As a result, gold has nearly gained $600 overnight. Most money held in cash is now worthless. We're heading towards a global digital economy. Cashlessness. Joining me with their take on this gripping story and much more, John Embry, senior strategist of Sprott Asset Management, thinks the big players are clearing their short positions in anticipation of an explosive gold and silver move. Then Rob Kirby from Kirby Analytics says a huge amount of gold, nearly 2 years output, paper gold that is, was dropped on the market following the presidential election. This was an act of desperation, he says, by the deep state. And his numbers match up with Dr. Stephen Leeb. They're convinced that China could actually hold 10 times more gold in reserves than officially reported, as high as 30,000 metric tons. That's about three times the U.S., which is currently the official largest gold reserve in the world. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with another must-hear report. Remember, we'd like to hear your questions and comments. We'll be getting back to those in the next few weeks. You can call in 641-715-3900, followed by the extension number 5140-49. Please jot that down next to the phone or plug it right in. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Partly sunny weather appeared over the precious metals market on strong dollar selling. Although gold finished near the break-even point at $1,177, silver picked up 36 cents, 2.2%, ending at $16.83 an ounce. The precious metals XAU shares also moved higher, finishing at 82, up 4%. But black gold exploded higher, 12.2% per barrel, up $5.60, finishing at the highest weekly close in 1.5 years on the heels of an explosive CRB commodities market rally and news that OPEC had a surprise agreement to cut crude oil production. In related news, silver rallied over 2% as mentioned, thanks in no small part to the best efforts of India's President Modi. The November shock to ban the 500 and 1,000 rupee notes, that's about 86% of currency in circulation, about 98% of consumer spending. At a key point that Rob Kirby talks about in today's discussions, just as the Hindu wedding season and the Festival of Lights come into play. Nevertheless, the move reportedly sent gold soaring to as much as $1,700 an ounce under the table in India. People are scrambling around the world to convert paper for gold into the gold safe haven. In related news, the Financial Times reported that authorities have taken steps to curb gold imports there as well. In Beijing, to stem capital outflows to keep the currency there, the yuan currency has dropped to the lowest level against the dollar in 8 years, and officials have restricted, reportedly, the number of import licenses for gold bullion, making it harder for homes and consumers to purchase gold. And of course, China remains the number one gold importing nation. Precious metals bottom line. Well, the support in the CRB commodities index and dollar weakness, as well as the weaker-than-expected employment number, gave precious metals bulls some relief this week. The December FOMC rate hike is already, I think, factored into the market and should be a non-event. I think the big focus here will remain, you know, the economic plans and policies following the January 20th inauguration of the president-elect. Moving on to the Wall Street report, partly cloudy weather appeared over the New York Stock Exchange. Higher oil prices helped boost many of the big cap companies, including Lockheed Martin and Exxon, which helped keep the blue chips higher. The Dow Jones Industrials was up fractionally, adding 18 points, still closing at an all-time new weekly record high at 19,170. The S&P 500 dropped 21 points, about 1%. NASDAQ Composite dropped 143 points, the most, 2.7%, finishing at 52.55. Meanwhile, the U.S. dollar and Treasury yields pulled back following the monthly jobs report. The economy added about 178,000 new jobs for the month, less than expected, but the unemployment rate did fall to a 9-year low in November. Earlier in the week, on Tuesday, U.S. data indicated the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits remain near multi-decade lows. The two big policy meetings scheduled include the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank, both this month. The FOMC is widely expected to raise rates now on December 13 through 14th, with 97% odds, according to the Fed Funds Futures contract. Bottom line on equities. Well, the VIX Volatility Index and its first derivative, the VVIX, lifted off this week, showing some signs of fear re-entering traders' minds. Our favorite 7 Indicator Sentiment Index also is showing some signs of fear as the risk-off trade gains some momentum. According to the Goldseek Radio valuation model, though stocks remain wildly overvalued, they could drift higher, but equities are most certainly not a bargain at these levels. I see buying opportunities in 2017. Coming up after the break, more Goldseek.com radio. We'd like for you to stay with us. John Embry, precious metals industry professional for over 30 years, senior advisor at Sprott Asset Management, a favorite of our Goldseek network. Welcome back, John Embry.
Well, it's nice to be back, Chris. Pleasure to chat with you.
Always a pleasure to have you here. You were expressing some discontent and disappointment, obviously. You know, we've seen a lot of volatility in our favorite sector, and you know, we've had colleagues on here of yours and others who have said that maybe there was some big manipulation. For instance, Rob Kirby noted that there was something like 8,000 tons of gold dumped on this market. That's 16 million pounds or 256 million ounces. Paper following the presidential election, and it looks like a huge manipulation scheme.
Rob well, and I have a high regard for his thought process, and I think he's dead right. I mean, basically, they got, I think what I could refer to as the deep state, the people behind the curtain, got wrong-footed to some extent with Trump's election, and they moved heaven and earth to make sure that nothing got disrupted. You know, everybody thought that were Trump to be elected, it would be like Brexit. The gold price would go bonkers on the upside, which it did briefly in the middle of the night. And that's when they unleashed this massive selling attack, which started a downward trend. And what's happened subsequently on COMEX, I mean, there's been a massive wipeout of the open interest. I think from the peak, it was something like 668,000 contracts. As of yesterday, it's just down to over 400,000. That's sort of 26 million ounces of paper gold wiped out on COMEX. That's all part and parcel of this process. I think it's prelude to a major move up. I think the boys know this, and they're sort of cleaning the decks and getting rid of their short positions and what have you. So am I discouraged? No. Am I irritated? Yes.
Do you have any comments on the U.S. dollar strength? I mean, obviously that at least has coincided with these strategies and schemes they've put into place. Is that just an effect of their manipulations?
That's an excellent question, Chris. Like, I think that, you know, Trump's election isn't necessarily good for the rest of the world. Like, I mean, if he follows up in some of his policies. And I don't know that you could say the U.S. dollar is strong. I would prefer to say that the other currencies are weak. As my friend and partner Eric Sprott said years ago, and I love the expression, he said, you know, trying to pick the best currency in the world is trying to pick the best-looking horse in the glue factory.
As you say, there was a lot of reallocation of institutions, big players, hedge funds, deep pockets. Folks were caught off guard to some extent, maybe some anticipation of a Brexit-like event, though, too, having seen that 6 to 8 months ago earlier. Once this euphoria and or dissatisfaction wears off, what's the next piece to move on the chessboard here?
Irrespective of who is the president of the United States, it is going to be difficult, if not impossible, to get a growth scenario in the economy for the very simple reason, and I'm a big believer in Austrian economics, when you have infinitely too much debt in a system, you cannot grow sustainably. On that premise, if Trump follows up in his plans to cut taxes and undertake massive infrastructure spending, this, that, and the other thing. I think budget deficits will blow out, and we'll be sort of on the early stages on the trip to hyperinflation. But right now, everybody's euphoric. Things are going to be terrific, but they aren't going to be terrific, and it's just going to be a matter of how long it's going to take, you know, before people figure that out.
Unfortunately, I think the word was used too often. I'm probably guilty by association. The hyperinflation term was overused starting with 2006, and I think it turns people off. They've read about it in the blogosphere too much. But unfortunately, this time when the boy cries, I mean, there really will be a pack of wolves. And, you know, we've had John Williams from Shadow Stats last week, Peter Schiff, they're both in your camp. They completely back up and corroborate everything you say that hyperinflation could be an understatement. And then we see what's happening just south of our border in Venezuela. Shopkeepers don't even look at bills anymore. They just weigh them by the bag load for a few basic necessities. Most necessities are gone. You can't find toiletries. People forget this was the shining star of South America. I mean, this was the, you might say, the America of South America. And in just the blink of an eye, things are out of control. One message today noted that Trump is considering a gold standard advocate as Treasury Secretary. It might be a bit too much to hope that we would have some type of gold standard in just the next few years.
Didn't he just appoint Mnuchin, the guy from Goldman Sachs? We're dealing with such incredible uncertainty here because we've got a guy in there who is not a politician. And, you know, you really don't know what's going to happen in the near term.
No, it's well said, and I think that's the appeal. It's interesting because 8 years ago when President Obama came to power, it was the internet, I felt, that catapulted him into the presidency, and we've seen that again with Trump. I mean, if you looked at Trump's numbers online, the polls showed him they were abysmal, but when you looked at the number of folks reading his information, it was something like 20 times the opposition. So I really feel that this was a groundswell similar to Brexit. We're certainly hoping that there will be that big change. But I'm afraid that people might be disappointed yet again, because how much can one person really do?
I mean, the problems are so deep-seated. People are inherently optimistic. They want to believe in something better. And I mean, what Trump does represent is change. He is not the old guard's, you know, politician. So this is, and in the honeymoon phase, is looked upon positively. And I'd like to be positive, too. Unfortunately, I sort of, all the kind of work I do suggests that things are going to get worse rather than better.
And certainly there is the opportunity here to hopefully make we the people a more important moniker than we the cronies. For the most part, there's been a mindset that has been detrimental to society. Where I think many folks just have turned off the television. We haven't had a TV running in our house for almost 15 years.
I'm a sports fan, so I have my TV, but it's only on sports.
No, we were tickled to see the Chicago Cubs finally win the World Series. That's something. But, you know, I wanted to move on here to the situation with Prime Minister Modi in India, you know, wiping out the 500 and 1,000 rupee notes, you know, their largest. And then he announced that he wants to eliminate all cash and go to a cashless society. This in a society where 89% of daily transactions take place using some paper. That would seem to be a big plus for the precious metals, because people are once again nervous and put off by this type of, as you say, uncertainty.
This attack on cash, and it's not only in India, it's in Australia, and it's sort of building momentum globally. I'm totally opposed to it. I mean, it's just more state control because they can monitor every single thing you do. So, yeah, I think on that premise alone, like, if you can't own cash and you've got to have everything sort of paper in the system, I would heavily endorse gold out of the system. Don't have it. Make sure you know where it is and it's in a safe place. But, yeah, I think that's a tremendous positive. And I would make one other comment, and that is that I believe India is under the complete influence of the United States. So I think this is sort of a trial run for this cashless society stuff. The previous head of the Bank of India, who resigned not that long ago, was U.S. trained, and he was clearly in there at the U.S.'s behest.
A puppet, Treasury Secretary, or monetary official, that, again, is just worth taking note. I was unaware of that. And, you know, as we wrap up here today, just wanted to throw in a comment, a recent comment from John Hathaway, of course, the head of...
I've been following Hathaway's work. I know him quite well, and he's been one of the guys all along, Chris, that's been really spot on in his analysis of gold.
He just penned an article saying that the U.S. presidential election involved the dumping of 2 years' production of gold.
The people who are being taken advantage of, who are those that think these are real markets today with all the new financial innovation. I mean, between derivatives, high-frequency trading, algorithms, et cetera, it's very easy to do.
I think you're right. And the key word there was derivatives, because it just gives them such amazing leverage. And these products get more and more fancy. I mean, there's so many bells and whistles, and the opportunity to do this, I think, without transparency is the word I'm looking for, that makes it so detrimental to society. All right. Well, as we wrap up, any topicality we've missed today?
I love the United States. I spent a lot of time there. You know, I think the people that have supported Trump, he's going to be disappointed over the next several years, because you're not going to be able to get the economic lift and the improvement of their living standards that they're hopeful for. And I'm worried about how they will respond to that.
What I hope is people are level-headed and recognize how much can we expect one person to accomplish in 4 years after 40 years.
Chris, I mean, it all started when they took the U.S. dollar off, removed the gold backing. That began the slippery slide to a debt crisis that is going to be ginormous.
Well, see, that's approaching 50 years, you know, with Nixon and the gold window. I think that was 71 or 70.
45 years plus now, you're right.
We all remember what happened during that decade to gold. Do you see another moment like that in the future?
Man, I'm on record as saying this, in my opinion, when you look at the price of gold and silver in relation to the amount of debt and currency, et cetera, in the world, I'm not sure they've ever been cheaper than they are as we speak at this moment. I think the guys that know what's going on, the boys behind the scene, the bullion bankers, the central bankers, that's one of the reasons why they're having this vicious takedown of gold, because they're reversing their positions. They're getting the longs out and they're covering their shorts.
Please tell people more about Sprott Asset Management and any other contact information you'd like to leave.
You know, Sprott Asset Management is a money manager. We're great proponents of gold, and you can go to our website, www.sprott.com, and there's quite a, you know, wide variety of information. I would encourage people to look at it.
Always appreciate your thoughts, and hopefully you'll have more for us in 2017, as I suspect this is going to be a very interesting year yet again for the precious metals.
Well, I quite frankly, 2016 worked out a lot better for the bulls than I would have thought, so we'll see how 2017 goes.
Almost all of the rallies over the last 5 years fizzled out, but not 2016. We've had some selling, but we're still up for the year.
Oh, it's remarkable. Like, I mean, I was a long-term stock jockey, and I've never, you know, this is one of the most expensive markets I've ever seen, particularly when you factor in the deteriorating fundamentals like profits and economic activity, etc.
John Embry, we always appreciate your thoughts, sir.
It's always nice to talk to you, Chris, anytime.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned, with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers. producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Ariba, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Rob Kirby, macroeconomic analyst, formerly worked at Bank of Nova Scotia. Welcome back.
Pleasure to be with you, Chris.
Wanted to start off today, if we could, with some of the interesting work you've done. You arrange gold sales between buyers and sellers, not by the ounce, by the ton. And you noted that clients are very concerned about the greenback. Tell us more.
People in the world who have had enough of dollars and whose reserve accounts are full of dollars are looking for ways to diversify the reserves and are seriously in the business of acquiring as much physical gold bullion as they can in the name of diversification. This has been ongoing for the past decade and a half at least, and I expect it to continue and the demand for physical gold bullion to heighten as we move forward.
Since the presidential election, people have gotten nervous, and you've gone on record saying that an enormous tonnage of paper gold was unleashed on the market, something like 8,000 tons. I mean, you know, at least on paper, that's close to the entire U.S. Federal Reserve and Treasury Department's reserves of gold.
Sure. Well, that amount was expelled into the paper markets in the 3 days following the election. In the single day after the election, it was close to 6,000 metric tons that were sold, which is basically 2 years of global mine supply pushed into the market in paper form in 24-hour period. So this I view personally as an act of desperation on the part of monetary authorities around the world to make gold on paper exchanges anyway look like the not to go to asset that it really is. So I view it as an act of desperation, and to me it means long-term bullishness for the metals in general.
You're on the same show with John Embry this week from Sprott Asset Management, that this is one of the tightest times they've seen on record. This could be, if you will, setting the launch pad for really exciting fireworks ahead.
Chris, if we look at the actions as opposed to the words and opposed to the phony price discovery that we see either on the COMEX exchange or the LBMA, the London Bullion Market Association, which is London-centric for the European market, where the bulk of the world's gold is really traded, at least in paper form. But if we look at the actions of the globalists, and I like to reference the globalists when I speak in terms of attacks on the precious metals. The globalist entity has a captive person in one of the world's biggest demand centers for gold, which is India. India is basically accepted to be around the world as the world's largest consumer of physical gold bullion. And actions that have been taken in India in the last couple weeks at their annual highest demand period, which is a festive season in the fall in India, where buying and giving of gold, physical gold, in jewelry form or in small denomination form is extremely high. The government in India, in a shock move, outlawed the use of 500 and 1,000 rupee banknotes. And you see, the vast majority of physical gold that gets transacted in India is done so with physical bank notes, namely and expressly the 500 and 1,000 rupee bank notes. These notes have now been outlawed, as in they cannot be used as legal tender, and new notes have been rationed to the marketplace, as in people cannot just freely go to the bank and exchange the old notes for the new ones that are being brought in. This has been an absolutely premeditated attack on trying to quash physical demand for gold in India at the highest point of demand season. This is the action of the globalists and the deep state. This has been written up in a very brilliant article by Sean Doherty, and I would recommend that anybody listening to this Google the name Sean Doherty and read the piece that he has put together on Indian gold demand and how the globalists have quashed or attempted to quash physical gold demand in India. This is another sign of desperation on the part of the globalists to try and curb gold demand because they're up against the wall and they don't have the product.
You hit the nail on the head. Look, we just talked to John Embry. He notes that the person behind Modi's decision, that's Prime Minister Modi at India, move to a de facto digital currency in a nation where 89% of transactions are typically through paper currency or coins. Compare that with 30% in North America. But here's the person behind the scenes, a former Wall Street executive appointed as the head treasurer in India, according to John Embry, and he's the one pulling Modi's strings here. With the help, obviously, of Rob Kirby and John Embry, we get the big picture. And by the way, we're going to put up links to Doherty's article. You can just click that link when you hear our voices today and read the article that he's referring to. The powers that be see something coming. The deep pockets around the planet, they're bracing for the inevitable economic calamity right around the corner. Michael Snyder at Economic Collapse just noted the wealthy are building underground bunkers in anticipation of post-dollar world and an apocalypse.
It's going to be extremely relevant and will have severe impact on the value of the dollar and on the state of the U.S. debt markets, because I don't think the world is going to be revelations that, in my view, are absolutely going to come to light in the very near future regarding the seediness of leadership. We're speaking about the rise of Donald Trump to the president-elect status in America, with his winning the election on November 8th. What this uncontrollable person who has basically taken the Republican Party over in a coup, at least in my view, that's what's occurred there. He has the globalists basically wrong-footed in that one of their chosen disciples is not at the control station pulling the levers on policy going forward in the United States of America, and this has created a severe roadblock to the globalist agenda, which is the usurping of national sovereignty in countries who are signatories to trade pacts, which really aren't about trade at all. It's about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and whether it's the TPP or the NAFTA, these treaties are all designed to usurp sovereignty of the signatories and not to promote trade, as we have been led to believe by politicians who are in the pockets of globalists. This is quite evident when you start getting into the minutiae of the economic data behind the headlines that were given with such gleeful abandon, for instance, we had a better-than-expected GDP report yesterday reported in the United States of America, and all I can say to anybody who wants to stick their nose into the trough and do some of the dirty work, you will see that while we trumpet headline numbers on GDP being higher than expected, these headlines are not consistent with freight traffic in the United States, which is anemic. And I'm just citing, basically citing commentary by a chap by the name of John Williams of ShadowStats.com, who reverse engineers all of the government sponsored and government produced data, and gives us a more accurate reflection of what's happening in reality. If GDP is as robust as officialdom would have us believe, freight traffic would be up. It's down. Petroleum use is down. Corporate revenues are anemic, and broad employment numbers, while they're reportedly very robust, they're anemic, because what they've done with the employment data over the years is they've stopped counting people who can't find jobs as being unemployed. And you see, when you start doing that, and when you start compromising your benchmarks and the way you measure things, you're really throwing hope to the wind. So, you know, the reality of the world we live in versus what we are told by officialdom are two completely separate things. And all I can say to you, Chris, and people listening, is that this is borne out in the, let's just say, in the ratings of the mainstream financial press, which are absolutely in the toilet. And the trust factor, because there are people around that measure these sorts of things, people, you know, how much trust or belief people have in the mainstream reporting mechanism, which is at an all-time low and still sinking. So, you know, and we've seen the rise of the alternative press, which is, you know, the type of transmission that you're listening to right now, and others, Chris. So, I mean, the words we get from officialdom do not jibe with measurable things in reality.
One of my favorite mathematicians, Paul Erdős, the late Paul Erdős, used to say, a problem worthy of attack proves its worth by fighting back. We're seeing the lamestream media fight back, calling us now, what is the latest moniker? A sophisticated, I have news for him, we're not sophisticated, a sophisticated Russian propaganda tool.
We seem to have a new talking point every day. I mean, the mainstream press, Chris, to put it very, very bluntly, the mainstream globalist entity is collectively crapping their pants right now because of Trump's election. They are doing everything in their power to delegitimize his election with the getting recounts in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, which coincidentally, if they all happen to be successful in reversing Trump wins in those three states, would take away enough electoral college votes to put him under the threshold needed to become president. And, you know, this is not by coincidence that this has occurred. And let it be known that the states in which the recounts are being attempted, there were states that Hillary won by smaller margins than Trump won the three name states, where no recounts have been ordered at all. This is just so raw and rank, perversion of reality, and such a raw and rank attempt at trying to reverse or delegitimize an election that I've ever heard of or could conceive of.
Hey, what would you expect from the swamp? Raw and rank. Shifting the discussion back to the precious metals, you know, you're talking about 540 claims for every ounce of gold at the COMEX against it. So we're talking about leasing here where the metal isn't there. We've heard this from Ron Paul and many others regarding our Fort Knox, our gold, supposedly a reserve gold, up to 10,000 tons. What do we need to keep in mind with regard to gold leasing, and what does that potentially mean for the market?
Well, gold leasing allows central banking to create, call it phantom gold. You see, it's through gold leasing And this was first exposed by a chap by the name of Frank Veneroso in the mid-1990s. And Frank Veneroso had a good friend, his name was Terry Smeaton, at the Bank of England, who was in charge of the gold depository at the Bank of England. And back in the mid to late 90s, it was Terry Smeaton who, in speaking with Frank Veneroso, he started talking to Frank about how banks were, central banks or countries were leasing a whole lot of gold. And procedurally, what happens when countries lease gold, the gold comes out of the vault, the gold is sold into the market, and the country receives the proceeds of the sale of the gold to their, you know, or spend in their general revenues. And in place of the physical gold that left the vault, an IOU is put there, but it's counted on the same line as gold present in the vault. So in this way, you can make your gold, a physical gold depository, look much bigger than what in reality is sitting there on the floor. It's called double counting. And if you want to think this through a little bit, if you lease it to, if party A leases it to party B, and then party B leases it to party C, and then party C leases it to party D, you can actually make one lump of gold look like four lumps of gold the same size, when in fact, you know, all you really have is a paper IOU there. Now, the IMF it's the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements, they acknowledge that this double counting occurs, and yet they do nothing to force or make their members compliant in doing anything on the accounting line about this. So this is organized deception and basically organized thievery, and it's how national treasuries around the world have their gold looted from them or the people, or looted from the people, because sovereign gold is an asset of the people.
This just reminds me of Frank Portnoy's late 1990s fiasco. If any of my listeners haven't read it yet, he laid this all out with the derivative scam and nightmare that was headed our way almost 10 years in advance. And I know you cut your teeth in the derivatives market as well. Our gold is leased out on one side of the balance sheet. Then we move over to the other side of the balance sheet, and we've got a fractional reserve currency system, which bases money on nothing. That seems like an algorithm for disaster. Tell us why.
It's an algorithm for disaster because it is by definition, Chris, a Ponzi scheme. It is literally the definition of a Ponzi scheme, where you make promises to people, and you have nothing tangible to back up the promises. You know, this is the model that the COMEX exchange and the London Bullion Market Association, the LBMA, this is the model that these organizations are built on. They have no product to sell to justify their corrupt price discovery mechanism, which is namely the purchase and sale of futures contracts, which are promises of gold and or silver. They don't have the physical product to make good on the sales of these empty contracts. But we are all supposed to believe that, you know, that the price of gold is what their paper trade is reflective of.
You've kicked the cover off the ball. I mean, look, we've got, as you say, in India, at just the peak moment, I think the Festival of Lights coming up and the wedding season kicking into gear. This is the time when traditionally metals are in high demand for ceremonies and things of that nature. Of course, then we also have here in the United States, we have our holiday season coming up. Jewelers and manufacturers, you know, they're starting to increase their supplies. What happens, Rob, if the elite get their way and the whole world follows this trend of a paperless society where we go digital and they have total control over every transaction? And would it not then be much easier to put in some type of taxing system on the yellow metal that none of us would be too happy about? We'd be forced to be involved in.
Yeah, well, let's cut right to the chase here, Chris. The goals of the globalists are to have one world currency, digital, one world government, which is basically not elected and not representative of the people who will be subject to it, and one world religion, which is the worship of state itself. This globalist planetary agenda envisions the global population, instead of being 7 billion people that currently reside on the planet, they have a plan for the planet where the population is 500 million. So they're basically planning on a go-forward basis the offing of 6.5 billion of us. And they refer to us colloquially as useless eaters. And those are the words of none other than Henry Kissinger in white papers from the 60s and 70s. This is what their plan is, and their plan is wrapped up in a word. It's called eugenics. And at the center of eugenics, the whole principle of eugenics is very consistent with the proliferation of GMO food, vaccines, which are causing, massive amounts of, planned for reactions, you know, with the rise of so many diseases that used to be exotic and used to be very, very uncommon have now become very, very common with the proliferation of vaccines, which could be made clean but aren't by design.
You've pulled the lid off the genie's bottle here. Recent years, I decided to go back to school, and I was forced into these batteries of vaccinations. Middle-aged man taking these vaccinations that were probably designed for young folks. Nevertheless, I developed pseudo mumps all over my back in the area where these jabs were given. And can you imagine what that would do to a 6-week-old, a 6-month-old, a 1-year-old? It destroys the immune system. And that's why autism, as you said, is off the chart. We refuse to let our 3-year-old have any of those jabs until after the age of 2, which, of course, reduces the chance of autism. Just what will happen if they get their way? Okay, what happens if all of these plans that you're talking about come to fruition?
Well, if they come to fruition, we see a dramatic reduction in the population. And the other nasty side effect to a lot of these things, let's just say GMO foods and the vaccination regimes, is that fertility rates have declined. There have been tests done, and officialdom knows this, but there have been tests done where they feed a rat GMO corn, a diet of exclusively GMO corn, and within 90 days, they render the rat infertile, cannot reproduce.
Georgia Guidestones completely outlines everything you've said here. They want a 90% at least reduction. They don't want more than 500, I think it is 500 million people.
The number.
Yeah, so they want, that's more than 95%. And of course, now we all know this goes back to, as you say, eugenics. It's irksome. You see, Darwin never said survival of the fittest. He implied survival of the most adaptive.
We're talking about a group of elitists, which I refer to as the globalists, and the globalists feel that, you know, they have the God-given right to make these decisions on behalf of humanity, because they feel that they are intellectually and morally superior to all the rest of us. And I mean, this is what humanity is confronting. This is what is at the center of the, let's just say, the ruckus that's now occurring in America with the election of Donald Trump. You see, if we haven't spelled it out clear enough for the listeners, Chris, Donald Trump was not the globalist candidate. And the globalists had control of everybody else in the Republican field that ran against Donald Trump. And as a result of Trump breaking through and winning not only the Republican leadership, but then winning the presidency, this is a manifestation, by the way, of nothing but populism. And had Donald Trump not been the figurehead of this movement, the movement still would have occurred, and there would have been another man that would have filled that slot. I would suggest the odds that he may be being lined up for a tragic fall or he may be being lined up for an assassination. You know, the Electoral College in America does not meet until December 19th. I think we're at a very, very dangerous point in it's bigger than American history, because it's a very, very dangerous point in human history, because the implications where it stands with Donald Trump, I think it's not just about America. This whole anti-globalist thing is a movement which is global. It was first manifested with the Brexit vote, where Britain voted to not be part of the euro. And I mean, on December 4th, we have Italy conducting their own referendum as to whether the Italians are going to stay in engaged with the euro. So this is not a movement just in America. It's not a movement just in Britain. This is a global movement, and it's the rise of populism. And what it really symbolizes, Chris, is the little people rising up against the globalist interests who basically have it in for us. And you know what? It's high time it happened. And for the sake of humanity, I hope it continues.
I'd like your thoughts on Jim Rickards, former collaborator with the CIA, DOD. He's talking about a financial crisis on the Lilliputians that I think you've referred to, not the we, the cronies, but he's talking about the global elites have a secret plan for a financial crisis. Do you suspect or do you agree with the statement that they're waiting for December 19th for unleashing the Kraken on these markets?
I wouldn't be at all surprised if that were to be the case, that a financial crash, which in my view should have already occurred, is being prevented from happening until the day, if as and when, Donald Trump is installed or inaugurated as President of the United States. With regards to Mr. Rickards, Mr. Rickards, I believe, is a conflicted personality. Because Mr. Rickards is basically one of the, at least in my view, is one of the globalist go-to boys, and basically a Mr. Fix-It. If you read a CV of Rickards and his past accomplishments, you will see things on there. You know, he seems to be a practicing attorney, a hedge fund manager, an author. He was a hostage negotiator in the Islam, you know, when hostages were taken back in the late 70s in Iran with the Islamic Revolution. He was the chief counsel for long-term capital management, if any of you remember that name. And long-term capital management just happened to have had as one of their biggest clients the Central Bank of Italy. And the Central Bank of Italy did lease gold and took the proceeds from the leased gold and invested that money with long-term capital management. Long-term capital management then leveraged the proceeds that they had under their administration. They leveraged them up, made a huge bet on Russian bonds, which defaulted, and they lost the money. And you see, in the late 90s, when Italy Italy's finance ministry was being run by one Mario Draghi, who is currently the head of the European Central Bank, but he in a former life he was the Italian finance minister, and he was coached by none other than Goldman Sachs, their financial advisor, to lease their stagnant asset gold and invest the proceeds with a can't miss at long-term capital management. Because, after all, long-term capital had Nobel laureates who were managing the money. And how could anything go wrong when you're investing with Nobel laureates? Guess what? They lost the money, and Mr. Rickards was appointed to do a secretive workout of long-term capital's fall from grace. And had there been a public workout, it would have been revealed that the Bank of Italy was short a whole pile of gold that they had leased, and they had now lost the money, and this would have thrown Italian finances into a position where Italy would not have qualified for the euro under Maastricht Treaty guidelines, and the euro would have been stillborn. But that didn't occur, because Mr. Rickards, acting for the globalists, wasn't going to allow that to become public knowledge. And he did everything in his power to cover that up. And Mr. Rickards, while he does speak and does issue some kernels of truth, Mr. Rickards speaks with a forked tongue. And Mr. Rickards is not to be trusted because he has dual agendas.
I'd like to wrap up with one of your comments on China, this idea that they may have more gold than they're disclosing officially, and that the West thinks your number, which seems outlandish at first look, your number, your guesstimate on just what the People's Bank of China might be holding in their vaults is identical to Dr. Stephen Lieb, one of our favorites here on the show. You both came up with a figure, I'm sure independently, that China could have as much as 30,000 tons of gold. That would be three times the United States, and it would be an enormous stockpile reminiscent of, the movie Dune. Give us an idea of how this could be devastating.
Chris, if China holds 30,000 metric tons of sovereign gold, China would be in a position at a time of their choosing to back their currency with gold. And if China were to back their currency with gold, the dollar standard would disappear overnight. And this would precipitate a tsunami of dollars returning to America, and very most likely would touch off a hyperinflationary event. The ramifications are very large with regard to China and how much gold they actually possess.
Again, the implications profound, because I think you're understating it here a bit, but I mean, it would certainly put China as the de facto reserve currency nation with the yuan and the renminbi. And of course, you would then see an unraveling, maybe even a tsunami of dollars returning to North America. You've got a great website packed with information. Any other contact info today?
Yeah, actually, you can find me on the web at KirbyAnalytics.com. That's my home on the web. I guess my parting comment would be to anybody, if you're going to be involved in the precious metals sector, my wish would be for everybody to get physical and think first about owning and holding physical bullion.
We want everyone to have not just a modicum, but a solid core position in physical metals. I'm not talking some ETF with rehypothecated bullion. You could wake up tomorrow and find out we've gone to a fully digital currency.
Gonna just add the comment, if you can't touch it, you don't own it.
That's all you need. And if you've got that gold, you've got bags of silver coins, they have less control over you. Rob Kirby, you got to come back to the show soon.
Pleasure being with you, Chris.
Gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned, with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. A meme being advanced right now is the idea of fake news, implying a scarlet letter or branding terminology designed to label certain kinds of news as questionable or inaccurate. Much like the often used conspiracy theory term, which has been losing impact and credibility. The term fake news is supposed to brand certain points of view as ideas without credibility that should be ignored. But if one looks at the contradictory viewpoints that emerge in just mainstream media alone, one must ask, where should the line be drawn? How should the definitions be judged in identifying the true culprits of fake news? Perhaps the introduction of the fake news meme is a Freudian slip, so to speak, by mainstream media itself, in that some, if not much, of its reporting is fake, skewed, or inconsistent. Case in point was the first jobs report released since the presidential election, in which the Labor Department says a record number of people, 152,085,000, were employed in November in the United States, but that a record 95,055,000 Americans were not in the labor force, a total of 446,000 more than October. Many mainstream media outlets like to focus on the headline of 152 million people who were employed, but willfully ignore the meaning and implication of the growing number of people who are no longer in the labor force. The New York Times titled a jobs report article by saying, "President Obama is handing a strong economy to his successor." But is he really? If one looks at the 152 million number in isolation, without regard to any other facts, sure, one might conclude that, especially if it agrees with their world or political view. But facts have a sneaky way of interfering with the best laid plans or narratives. Last month, a CNBC article brought up that pesky term called the U6 unemployment rate, which is typically double the acknowledged and often used U3 unemployment rate. In October, the U3 unemployment rate was 4.9%, and in November, 4.6%. But the U6 rate in October was 9.5%. And those who analyze these numbers professionally, like John Williams of ShadowStats, show a number in excess of 20%. So is the New York Times engaging in fake news when they characterize major issues in the economy as simply pockets of weakness? When they say, "Pockets of weakness also surfaced in the latest jobs report, which showed that more people dropped out of the labor force last month than joined it." They said manufacturing jobs declined further, and there are still plenty of part-time workers who would rather be full-time. And while the official jobless rate for high school graduates fell to 4.9%, it is more than twice the rate of college graduates. This point they attempted to downplay, but that's in sharp contrast to an NPR report from May that said, For the first time in more than 130 years, Americans ages 18 to 34 are more likely to live with their parents than in any other living situation, according to a new analysis by the Pew Research Center. In that age group, 32.1% of people live with their parents in their parents' house, while 31.6% live with a spouse or partner in their own homes, and 14% live alone as single parents or in a home with roommate or renters. This is the largest percentage of young people living at home since pre-World War II. NPR thinks it's economy-related. They say for many millennials, Pew's conclusions might seem both unsurprising and easy to explain. The Great Recession happened, of course. But it would seem some mainstream media, like the New York Times, prefer to deny the continuing impact of the Great Recession. Another misnomer in that it has all the hallmarks of a depression. And there are many examples to cite. I've been traveling extensively the past few weeks, and in doing so, have had an opportunity to read and listen to local news in a variety of markets across the U.S. One theme that continues to emerge is how charities and community organizations have hit capacity in the services they are able to provide. Demand continues to peak in what many in the mainstream media are representing as a healthy, sound, and growing economy that will be passed from one political administration to another. Hardly. The challenges are large, and the stakes are high. Mainstream media is one of the biggest instigators of fake news going. Most have no investigative news arms anymore and rely on publishing information without vetting it. The alternative media, which is a term that many are attempting to redefine as less credible media, is actually analyzing, investigating, and reporting on media in an investigative fashion that mainstream media lost long ago. I contend much of the fake news put forth comes from mainstream media itself, and alternative media should actually rebrand and redefine itself, not as alternative media, but what it actually represents, direct media. Direct media is what citizen journalists the world over provide. And instead of calling itself the alternative media, those of us in it should refer to ourselves as the direct media. Chris, I'd like to direct our listeners to visit my website at conquerchange.com and join my new email list. I've been gearing up for some time to release new content and special features, which are just around the corner, so please visit conquerchange.com and sign up today. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with conquerchange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
The
gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.